So it looks like I may have Anthony back here. Anthony, are you with us?
I am here.
Yay!
Technology.
Technology, yes. You know, the technology is actually smarter than I am. So, well, I'm so glad to finally have you on the show. I do apologize for that. So why don't we just kind of jump into things? I just wanted to, let's start with, you know, you have a really diverse background and you arrived at your mission in a really unusual way. Can you maybe tell our listeners how you became involved in elder issues and what you are trying to achieve?
Sure. So I started out my career in Philadelphia. I'm now in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I started working first in broadcasting, eventually wound up in hospitals and was a marketing director for a group of hospitals in Philly, and went to New York and helped launch a company there. So I've always been in healthcare, but I've always had a parallel track, and that parallel track was an entertainer and a singer and more than a hobby, you know, been to the, you know, National Record and sang at resorts and casinos and all kinds of stuff. And when I got tired of the politics and it's like having a second family being in a band, I decided, well, God gave me this voice, and what am I going to do with it? And I had a person that was working for me at the hospital, and he was a juggler of all things, and he was juggling in nursing and continuing care communities. And he said, you should go check these places out. They really could use good entertainers. And so there, you know, being a marketing guy, I put my marketing hat on, and by the time I left Philadelphia, I was probably doing 100-plus shows a year plus my full-time job. And what I found was I got, first of all, really good at being a performer as opposed to just being a musician in a band, and I was getting a heck of a lot of fulfillment out of what I was doing, and I realized how much I was giving fulfillment as well. And so when I came to the Carolinas and I started my healthcare consulting business, I really started to then develop what's the other side. You know, I have a hospital side, but what's the elder care side? And, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of progressed through the years, you know, in terms of what I've been doing. I'm the assisted living guide for about.com and on different boards that are trying to move, you know, things along in terms of person-centeredness and nursing homes. But if at the end of the day you ask me kind of what my platform is, I call it educated aging. And it's the idea that people need to prepare sooner in life for aging issues, and from a physical standpoint, emotional, and a financial standpoint. And that's kind of my platform that I'm trying to get out there to, so that, you know, because a lot of times when people are starting to listen to shows like yours and really starting to seek care, they're already in the midst of things. And I'm trying to take a step back and delay the crisis in some respects.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Educated aging. I think it's so important for us to be educated as to what happens before the crisis happens. And, you know, my work in admissions and marketing, it was always crisis time. So, you know, I really value the fact that you really want to get to people and kind of help them to understand what the aging process is like and what they can expect. So.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was reading an article on hospital and health networks, and, you know, one of the things I'm preaching on my hospital side right now is about, you know, the fact that people, and I'm a boomer, we have to start taking care of ourselves, because the more medicine progresses, it seems the more people depend on it and depend less on themselves. And there was an interesting article that essentially it was entitled something about giving the baby boomers a kick in the butt, because you know, the health system can get as good as it can, and we can give access all over the place. But the bottom line is if people don't start exercising self-responsibility, we're going to have a true crisis on our hands.
You know what? I absolutely agree with that. You know, what's in the future for us could possibly not be the best thing. So, now, when I, you know, you and I have talked in the past, and I've looked through your websites and through all of your blogging and all of the writing that you've done, and there's definitely a touching story on your website and a video, too, of how your mission was solidified with elders. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of share that with us?
Sure. I call it the story of Esther, And Esther was a resident in an assisted living facility in Hickory, North Carolina, that when I first moved down to the Carolinas, I went and entertained. And, you know, my programs are very interactive and fun and goofy and corny at the same time. And so, you know, what would happen is that Esther became what I called my designated heckler. You know, so if I would say something outrageous, she would just roll her eyes, but she'd eventually just go along with me. And so you can imagine that over time we became really fast friends. And one day the activity director was calling me, and she said, "When you come this time, would you please consider going over to the hospital and visiting Esther? She wants to she wants to see you." So I didn't really think much of it. We got done performing, and the activity director and I drove over to the hospital, and the activity director kind of landed on me that Esther was in the CCU unit and had actually died and was revived a week earlier. And I'm saying, "Well, what the heck does she want to see me for?" Well, turns out I get there, and Esther's daughter's there, and Esther starts flirting with me. It's kind of hilarious. and we're just having a great old time. Well, she wanted me there because she wanted me to sing to her, and she wanted me to sing this one particular song, "Because He Lives." It's a beautiful song. "Because He Lives, I Can Face Tomorrow." So I said, "Esther, there's only one problem. I'm Anthony, and I'm from South Philly. And, I sing, when I'm playing for my peers, I do all the rock stuff. But, you know, when I'm singing for folks like in the assisted living and nursing homes, I'm singing Sinatra and, that kind of stuff and the standards." And I said, "Frankly, I'm down south, and you have a whole cadre of people who do, the gospel and the religious songs." I said, "That's just not what I do. I don't know it." And she said, "Well, that's what I want." I said, "Well, I don't know it." And I eventually sang her "Unforgettable" by Nat King Cole because the moment was, and she was. And so I said, "I'm going to learn that song." And so I did. And I came back, and I have a little home studio, and I recorded "Because He Lives." And I sent cut a CD, and I sent it to her. And as far as I knew, you know, she was back at the assisted living, and all was right with the world. And she had she received the CD. What happened was a couple weeks later, the activity director called me and said Esther was in hospice. And then, of course, Esther passed on. And I don't normally make it a habit to go to, you know, funerals of residents who I've come to know. And I've come to know a lot over the years and quite closely. And for some reason, I was available, and I decided to go to the funeral that day. And when I got there, Esther's daughter came up to me, and she started crying. And she told me, and others told me, that essentially she had not cried until I walked in. She had no tears at all up until that moment. And she said, "Did you hear about my mother's last day of life?" And, of course, now at this point, I'm kind of welling up and saying, well no. She goes, "Well, on our last day, we listened to your CD with that one song, 'Because He Lives,' over and over and over again." And what happened was her daughter eventually knelt down next to her mom and started singing with me to her mother and telling her to let go. And essentially, Esther died that day. And, I don't know if there's any way further you can get a message from God that you're supposed to be doing something here. So that's the story of Esther. I actually had it happen, not to that extent, but last week I was in a place in Greensboro, and one of my friends was not at my performance. And you start to worry, because if they're not at the performance, they could be at a bigger performance somewhere. And
Right.
And so I went and hunted her down to find out where she was, and thankfully she was there, and I sang to her in her room, and we talked for a while. And I guarantee she talked about it for the next 3 days.
You know, I would have to say that's an extreme example of, I know when I worked in facilities day in and day out, I always felt that the residents and the family members gave to me more than I ever gave to them. So I think that's definitely, to me, would be a similar type of story, the relationship that you had with Esther.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have been talking about you as the author. And I really, when I first saw your book, I kind of chuckled at the title, "Who Moved My Dentures?" So can you tell me how this book came about and what's with the title?
Sure. So it was a total offshoot from being in the nursing and assisted living facilities and starting to talk to all of these residents about their life stories. And, essentially what evolved was a book that uses human interest stories to dispel myths about aging and long-term care, and that's, you know, kind of the genesis was the performing. The title, I mean, yeah, I'm a marketing guy, so I came up with it, and of course it's cute and all, but then I started, because, you know, it's related to that cheese book there, but,
right.
You know, I started thinking about it. This was after the fact. There was no, like, stroke of intelligence here that said, well, name it this, and because it may even have some meaning vis-a-vis the other one. Well, the Who Moved My Cheese book was about kind of resilience in the workplace, and Who Moved My Dentures was really not dissimilar in that it was resilience of seniors who, you know, imagine you or I who have to, after being in my house now in North Carolina for 11 years, if somebody told me, you know, tomorrow I would have to uproot myself because something happened and move into a nursing home or assisted living, even if it was just for rehab, there's a lot of resilience and a lot of things that you have to kind of prepare yourself to do. And so it really wasn't that, you know, it was kind of a related theme. It was just resilience in a different setting. It wasn't the workplace. It was your life.
You know, I love the title of the book. You know, I think it has a lot of honesty in it, and within the book, you really kind of talk about the specifically 13 different myths about long-term care facilities. And I like that you really approach the topic of long-term care facilities and myths about them. Could you share maybe just a couple of the top ones that we can talk about?
Oh, sure. You know, well, first of all, the biggest one that everybody still has, you know, those of us who work in the industry know that this isn't true, but there are good places and they're bad. But the basic society still thinks of these places as it's the place you go to die. And,
right.
You know, it's not. It's a place you go, hopefully, to live another chapter of your life with a quality of life. And, you know, the human interest story I give in my book is a woman named Jean Kopec, who was just a mild-mannered housewife who went into a continuing care retirement community. And, of course, you know, they're not for everybody, nor can everybody afford those types of things. But when she went in, she was just in awe of what she saw and was looking forward to being there. And she had been very quiet during her life. And she wound up being the person who came to all of, well, especially when I was there particularly, she was at all my performances. She would participate in every activity. So in some ways, this kind of place really just woke her up in terms of, you know, who she was as a person. And, you know, part of that, too, is kind of the other thing, things I talk about, especially when in my speeches, is kind of this idea of socialization, you know, in these places. Because, you know, how many of our seniors are living home, you know, alone by themselves, especially if they can't get around as well and have absolutely no socialization either. So, you know, so Jean actually dispels a lot of different things and shows a lot of the good side of what can happen in long-term care. So, you know, the friendships. I talk about two fast friends in one of the assisted living facilities in Spartanburg, South Carolina, Carolyn and Betty. And they were just, you know, they didn't know each other until, you know, they came to this place. And I think people don't realize that, you know, people make fast friendships in these places if they allow themselves to. I mean, I could tell you not everybody fits the mold. And, you know, I love my mother, Philomena. You got to love that name. And she'll be 92 this year, and she's living with my sister. And, you know, she has all her faculties about her. She just had to compromise a little bit after some surgery with having to have a walker. And, you know, my sister went on vacation once. We, you know, one of the assisted living places in Florida gave her a free week to go, and she just wanted no parts of it. So there is a lot of education to go around in terms of, you know, there's going to be people who absolutely need these places. I think ideally people are going to want to age in place and retrofit their homes and do all those things, but you're still going to need the social services and supports that come with that. So I think friendship is two, and I'll give you one more. The whole idea of there's nothing to do, and of course, especially on my about.com site, one of my guest authors is an activity professional. She actually consults with the organizations around that, and I could tell you that the things that she writes about, the innovative programs that are out there that activity professionals do in nursing and assisted living are remarkable. And of course, you know, with these F tags and MDS 3.0 and all the quality movement, you know, it has to become more and more individualized for people, and rightly so. And I also tell people from a marketing standpoint, the nursing homes and assisted living, that this is, you know, if you have great activities, you should bring them out into the community and have others enjoy them as well. So, you know, the idea that there's nothing to do is false. There's as much to do as you would want. And again, it doesn't mean I'm pro nursing home. It's just that I know there's a place for, you know, there's a place for everyone. And again, some of this self-responsibility, I mean, you know, you could get enough clinical experts on your show about prevalence of chronic conditions in our society and people not taking care of themselves, the whole thing I started off with at the top of the show, that, you know, there's going to be people who, and I see it, and I tell people, I see people in nursing homes who didn't get there because age caught up with them. They got there because they didn't keep up with themselves.
Right. You know, I just want to say, one, thank you for recognizing the activity professional. That's how I started in this industry, and it was probably the best time that I had in this industry is working with residents so closely. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that for as long as I've worked in communities, socialization and friendship are the things that I have seen just amaze me, because someone has lived in their home for so long by themselves, and they come into a community, nursing home, assisted living, independent, and they flourish. So I think you're spot on with that. And I even wish that my mom would, you know, listen to me. And I think it would be a great place for her to socialize and have some friendships as well.
Sure.
Now, real quickly, there's a couple things that I wanted to talk about. We have about 7 more minutes in the show. So the one thing I wanted to talk about is that you, going back to that concept of educating and educating aging. Now, I know in the end of your book, you really talk about some resources for caregivers. What advice do you have for caregivers in general?
Well, I think one of the first pieces of advice is that caregivers need to take care of themselves. And, you know, easier said than done, but, you know, 45% of Alzheimer's caregivers have worsened health than other caregivers, and 60% of caregivers will die before the one they are taken care of. You know, a lot of what this article I cited at the top about, you know, boomers needing a kick in the butt, you know, is all about taking better care of ourselves, but caregivers really need to, because the stress that comes with this is just, you know, and I hear from my sister, you know, is enormous. And so we all, I'm not saying this is stereotypical, but, you know, most of the time it's the woman who's the caregiver. And, you know, in my case, that's the way it was. My mother moved to Florida to be closer to my sister. Now, you know, I've helped financially, but my sister is on the ground. So I think all of us who are not directly on a day-to-day basis as a caregiver need to be thoughtful of those who are, and encourage them to reach out for help, and also, you know, and welcome that help and you know, embrace that. So you know, I think that the big thing is you have to have you have to take care of yourself, and you have to learn the lessons of what I think when you're in the moment too as well, because I'm really believe in, you know, there's a purpose to everything, and there's a purpose in people's lives. And, you know, my sister's purpose right now is to be a caregiver. She is retired, and, you know, there are many rewarding moments for this. So I also tell people to enjoy the moment that you're in, because it will not be forever, and you should take away, you know, all that you can from it, because you're going to look back on it with good memories. And so sometimes you just got to be in the now of what you're doing. And I think you can also be taught lessons about how to prepare for your own aging. Again, it gets back to my platform. You know, how many folks are saving enough for retirement? How many are physically taking care of themselves so that they can pretty much have a longer quality of life, you know, and avoid a lot of the things that maybe now they're facing with loved ones? You know, and just emotionally know what it means to be around seniors and their resilience. I'm always amazed that I'll go into a nursing home and I'll see, you know, this woman I saw last week, and she's blind and in a wheelchair, and yet she has so much gratefulness for her life that I would guarantee that there are people on the, quote, outside who have a lesser quality life than she does. So I think we could learn a lot if we just pay attention. Of course, you know, there's all kinds of hints and tips about just how to prepare and having your living will and durable power of attorney. I'm sure you cover those types of topics in your show. But, you know, if there's one thing, you know, I would say is you know, there's lots of resources for you to learn about how to take care of the one you're taking care of. I think it's more about taking care of you.
Right, right. You know, I would have to agree. And that was, you know, to me, when I learned that stat, probably a while ago, that 60% of the people, especially when it comes to Alzheimer's and dementia, that are taking care of that loved one, they actually pass away before that person with Alzheimer's. And that's an amazing statistic to me. And that tells you how much time and energy goes into this concept of caregiving. And I think it is so important to practice self-care and to really understand, you know, how to reach out to people and to have that support systems with you. So I think that's an excellent thing to be aware of. Now, we're getting close to that time that we kind of need to wrap things up. What are some ways that our guests can really connect with you?
Well, first of all, if anybody wants to talk with me, they can call me. I would welcome that, 877-278-8791. You could also, I think there's many websites into my world, but I would think my Who Moved My Dentures blog, keeping with the book theme, is one that you can probably Google and find. If not, the website is anthonysong.blogspot.com. So ANTHONYSSONG .blog, BLOGSPOT.com. And again, just Google it and you'll find it. And my email is, it's my last name, CIRILLO at the number 4, WARDFAST.com, and that's my healthcare consulting site. My company's called Fast Forward, but I couldn't get a name that way, so I went backwards and did Forward Fast.
Well, Anthony, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today, and I thank you so much for holding tight through all the technical difficulties that we had at the beginning of the show. I really appreciate you doing that.
Tammy, I appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. I want to thank everyone for joining in the conversation today. It has been a pleasure being here. I want to thank everybody that was in the chat room that kind of stuck in with us through the technical difficulties and that are listening as well. I just wanted to share with everyone that I have an upcoming workshop that's going to be happening in Taylor, Michigan.